Today on the program, taking a look at some of the issues the federal government is working on in the human resources area, and my guest to do that is Paul Rousen. He's managing principal at Totally Engaged Workforce Solutions and a regular on the program. And, Paul, it is great, as always, to see you on Federal News Radio. I guess we don't see you on the radio, technically, but I do, and I'm glad you're here today.
Yeah, it's good to be here live.
There are a lot of things going on, and we're writing about some of them on federalnewsradio.com. We're going to dig into the issues with the senior executive service, and that's probably the best place to start. Our top story on federalnewsradio.com this afternoon is headlined, Agencies Need to Quit Whining About SES. The whole issue of the senior executive service, something since the Partnership for Public Service released this survey last week, that has really been making the rounds at agencies. What are you hearing from both the people side of it and the management side of it about where the SES stands today?
Well, I think in any organization outside the federal government included, you're always looking for a senior executive service and a senior leadership team where their leadership is portable.
Mm-hmm.
That's all part of every great succession plan of any organization, whether it be mission-based or shareholder-based. And so I think, you know, it's timely to take a look at that, especially when you look at the numbers and the demographics and see just how many of these folks are eligible for retirement now.
Mm-hmm.
And then look at the next 5 years. So the supply chain of leadership is really at a critical point here in the federal sector.
It's interesting that you apply that term to it, because I'm not sure I've heard that before, and yet that's exactly what it is. We think about, or maybe should think about it, in the same way that we think about a supply chain for a procurement or for IT or whatever it is. Getting supplies into the field for men and women in uniform. Same idea?
It's much more critical.
Yeah.
It's even more critical than widgets. It takes a while to develop leadership skills. You don't just pop out of the box and become a great leader. So when it takes time to develop the type of skill sets that you're looking for, both at senior leadership levels, senior technical and senior professional levels, even those people who are really strong incumbents around the skill set that they're practicing, they also need to lead and motivate and mentor people. And that's an art form.
Mm-hmm. The whole conversation about buyouts and early outs and so on, I think, is particularly applicable here. I haven't seen any numbers that indicate that SES and high-level GS people are the folks that are being targeted by the buyouts, but certainly would seem logical, wouldn't it?
Well, I think, you know, the first time you ever take a look at whittling down your workforce, the easiest way to get your costs down is to, on a non-discriminatory basis, is simply to go after your top talent in high-paying positions.
Mm-hmm.
And you make an incentive to move them out. The real question is, so you incent them to leave, who's there to take their place? And if you leave leadership vacuums at all levels, that's a critical issue. The military understands this very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they've got an excellent way in which they create a succession plan around leadership in their organizations. I don't know how well practiced that is in the federal government, in the civilian ranks. I know it's a challenge in the private sector as well.
What does the private sector do differently and maybe better than what agencies, federal agencies, do?
I think there's a real serious investment, and especially if you're a publicly traded company, you're going to find that part of the risk management around a publicly traded company is that a chief audit executive and the chief risk officer would say you need to have a succession plan that goes deep into the organization. Then you need to know who's out there, who's available, who's ready, who's not. You'll see them look not just within their company, they'll look outside their company.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a really deliberate act around that, and they enable it with technology. They have very, very good succession planning resources and tools available to them, all web-based services of software solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And those actually feed through the performance review system. It's systemic, and it's usually by design.
What are some of the issues that are holding up people in government from doing the same thing, from taking advantage of some of those best practices?
You know, I don't want to second guess why it hasn't happened. I think for a long period of time, unless there's a need, you don't do anything.
Yeah.
Second of all, there's a lot of very specialized positions in the federal government. And, you know, you promote people into those positions because they are technically good at what they do. They're mm-hmm. unique. And in many cases, you would find maybe especially an agency that has got a very specific need. You're not going to want to let that talent go elsewhere. You're going to want to focus it right on, like a laser,
right.
on the work that it needs to do, mm-hmm. which is inherently government.
Yeah. The whole idea of all of this, I mentioned the survey that Partnership Public Service did. We have the link to that at federalnewsradio.com. Right after, as that survey came out, Congressman Jim Moran said he's going to work with the partnership and McKinsey and Company, who can help conduct the survey for the partnership, and develop legislation that would buck up the senior executive service. Congressman Moran said something that I thought was pretty interesting. He said, right now, and I'm paraphrasing, he doesn't believe he wants to the senior executive service to be the federal government's A-team, to be the very best. The implication of that remark to me was that he doesn't believe that it is right now. Mm-hmm. And it just struck me, as you and I have talked off the air on a number of occasions about the impact that the Fed bashing, if you want to call it that, has on morale, mm-hmm. and some of the other issues. You wrote a terrific piece on morale for our Managing Morale series. It seems to me that's kind of in the same vein as what it is that Congressman Moran was trying to do away with. What's the status of that Fed bashing concept at agencies now that you're hearing as you interact with people in government? Is that starting to dissipate a little bit? Is it kind of becoming old hat and people are getting used to it? Or do some of those concepts still sting a little bit?
Oh, I think they still sting. I think the damage has already been done. And I think, in essence, it's almost become a piling on in certain types of effects. If you were really trying to incent the federal workforce to do better and to raise morale, and especially at the leadership level, I don't think you would take this type of course. I think it's important to say we need to improve. I think it's another thing to come out and basically what almost feels like denigration. If I were following the golden rule, I wouldn't want to be treated this way, especially
yeah.
if I was putting in these long hours and I knew that I was, I might have some better benefits or greater job security, but it doesn't make me feel any better about my job, especially when I know for a fact that I'm underpaid compared to executives doing equivalent work mm-hmm. outside of the federal sector.
Yeah. A couple more points about SES I wanted to ask you about. You write, majority of GS-15s aren't even willing to consider SES. What are you hearing about that? What's the holdup? Is it just pay? Because we've talked about the pay issue on a number of occasions, or is it something else?
I think it's a whole basket of goods.
Yeah.
I mean, pay is one thing. If you take a look at the pay ranges, for SES, and you take a look at the pay ranges for the GS schedule, it's widely known and recognized, even at OPM and other places, that there's significant pay compression. And Congress sets a limit on pay, which it's within its rights to do.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't a very good pay philosophy, but it is what it is.
Uh-huh.
But the fact of the matter is if you're a GS-15 in D.C. With locality-based pay, it's just simply not attractive for cash alone to move over. Now, mm-hmm. if you add in longer hours, additional work, facing Congress on specific issues, it's a little bit easier to lay your head low and retire on a GS-15 salary.
Yeah. We'll talk somewhat about that basket that you mentioned, some of the things that we're seeing in legislation and so on when we come back. My guest is Paul Rousen on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. He is managing principal at Totally Engaged Workforce Solutions, and our conversation continues in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Want the facts on replicating and recovering data more efficiently? Then listen to this. According to a recent survey, data is growing at an annual rate of more than 30%. So if that's a concern for you, you're not alone. In the same survey, one respondent graduated from tape systems by using deduplication with data domain
and found that many more iterations of backups could be retained on disk. All this in the smallest possible footprint for off-site replication over relatively low bandwidth circuits. Here's another fact. EMC solutions replicate and recover data more efficiently while decreasing your storage footprint by 20 to 30 times. Want to hear more facts? As EMC's federal distributor and GSA contract holder, Carahsoft can provide you with government pricing and expert knowledge. For more information, visit www.emccasefiles.com. That's emccasefiles.com.
Meeting mission goals through IT modernization, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
A milestone for mobile technology in the federal government, the General Services Administration says its mobile app site now hosts 100 different citizen-facing applications from across the government. That's compared to 2 years ago, when apps.usa.gov held a catalog of just 15 apps. The 100th edition is a smoking cessation app from the National Cancer Institute. It helps smokers track cravings, moods, progress toward milestones, and smoking triggers.
General Dynamics IT delivers the full strength of enterprise IT to drive innovation like infrastructure consolidation and modernization, cross-domain information sharing, cloud computing, Web 2.0, and a constant flow of new applications and IT services. General Dynamics IT helps government, military, and commercial organizations achieve new levels of productivity and mission effectiveness. General Dynamics IT brings together the expertise, technology, and best practices to deliver secure enterprise IT solutions. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
The host drinks the most. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS Health Beat. College parties often involve heavy drinking, and one study finds that sometimes the host drinks the most. Ohio State University researcher Cynthia Bittner saw this in an online survey of close to 3,800 students who had hosted or attended parties over two academic years. Bittner says guests at parties in residence halls or off campus typically reported about 7 drinks, but off-campus hosts reported around 9 drinks. On-campus hosts reported around 4. Bittner advises hosts,
when you drink heavily, that means that you're not in a state where you can control what happens at your party in terms of who shows up, what kind of behavior is okay.
The study in the journal Addictive Behaviors was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS Health Beat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. You've heard it said, cybersecurity is a bipartisan issue. Well, not so fast. Competing cybersecurity bills have emerged in the Senate and soon in the House. Plus, your ability to advance depends partly on the Merit Systems Protection Board. The board will join us and tell us about its new strategic plan. Those stories and more tomorrow morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Paul Rousen. He's managing principal at Totally Engaged Workforce Solutions. And Totally Engaged Workforce, Paul, is something that we don't really have in the federal government right now. We saw that in the results of our Managing Morale Survey. That's available at federalnewsradio.com. Search term morale. The piece that you wrote for that series is posted there. And I wanted to ask you a couple of things about that. The title of it is Motivation in the Workforce, It Takes Two to Tango. Mm-hmm. Tell me who the two are and what kind of tangoing you're seeing right now.
Well, you know, the bottom line is any great work relationship is really fostered by a manager and an employee working very closely together. The manager setting directions, setting goals, the employee being aligned around those goals, seeing clear line of sight to the mission, and then trusting in the manager and a manager trusting in the employee to get the work done. Out of that trust element comes a lot of things that are critical for the employee to feel engaged. But trust is one of the key elements. Beyond trust, it's knowing that the manager is respectful of the time that they're putting into the job, the effort that they're putting forth, the results that they're getting. It's caring about the employee and showing that employee care through giving them a little bit more autonomy. Mm-hmm. And the employee earning that trust. Without it being a two-way street, I just don't see any working relationship really turning into something where innovation, creativity, and morale is at enough of a level that you're getting results from your organization.
Innovation is a word that we hear all the time that agencies are looking for in just about every area. And it's funny in the acquisition contracting side of it, when I have folks in here for industry chatter, a lot of times they are a little bit apprehensive about what the agencies are talking about. And they say, we're not really sure what the agencies want us to do. They tell us to be innovative, to show us innovation, but they don't really have any guidance about what direction to go in. If a manager sat down with you and you had that same conversation, what would that conversation go like when it came to dealing with my employees and leading them and managing them? And then I want to talk a little bit about the difference between those two concepts.
Okay. Well, if I'm a manager and I have employees and I know what my goals are, and those have been clearly articulated for me, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to assess what talent I have, and I'm going to put the right people in the right tasks, on the right jobs, with the right set of incentives and rewards. So it means that I'm going to need to know my team pretty well. I'm going to need to know what they've got under the hood in terms of skill sets and talent. It means that I'm going to give them a big enough challenge that they're going to know that I trust them, and I'm going to give them room to fail. And that's where the innovative and creative side of employees really come out.
Mm-hmm.
It's being given that safety net and being told that you have put them on task because you have confidence in them.
Mm-hmm.
And you have confidence that even in the midst of failure, something great is going to happen.
Yeah.
That's where people do their best work.
Yeah, it's really funny, and this might sound like a silly example, but I think it is apropos. My son is playing on a new soccer team, and he struggled the first couple of games. And he was down on himself, and I said, Bud, you wouldn't keep playing if the coach didn't think that you were good enough to do the job. And 2 weeks ago, he scored 6 goals. And I think it's the same idea, isn't it? It's the idea that if you understand from the person who is your leader that you're there for a reason, people respond incredibly to that and really do outstanding things.
Yeah, I'm amazed at how often we embrace complexity when it's really simplicity that we should be looking for.
Yeah.
Especially when things are complicated in this world. I mean, there's a lot of complicated issues we're dealing with. But in the end, it really comes down to a cognitive response that a worker takes every day to decide, am I going to use my discretionary energy to tackle this goal or to simply show up to work and work to the rule? And it's managers who are stewards of organizational energy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really are. They either breathe life into the organization or they suck the wind out of it. And employees can tell the difference very, very quickly. And that gets back to that dance and that trust element.
Yeah. You sent me over a note about when I asked you to come on the show, and you said, I really would like to talk about a theme, and you wrote the whittling away of the federal sector employee value proposition. I want to talk about that mm-hmm. when we come back from the break. But before we do that, I wanted to ask you just briefly, we've talked on the show before about the difference between a leader and a manager. One can be the other, but one isn't necessarily the other. They can be you can be one and not the other.
Mm-hmm.
What today makes a good leader and what today makes a good manager?
Well, I think first a good leader is a visionary person, a leader who listens actively to his staff, assesses the organization, proves through leadership by influence versus proximity. And by that, I mean a manager doesn't have to touch or see their employees every day. They just have to know them well enough and set clear communications and stay in touch with them, which in itself is telling somebody, I'm not going to micromanage you. You're an individual leader yourself. I just happen to have the responsibility for the buck stopping here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I would define as a good leader. A good manager is a good project manager. It's a person who understands all the sum of the parts and the individual components and can take a task and provide direction for all the people involved throughout the entire process and in the end delivers the results mm-hmm. through people.
You can be one and not be the other. And in fact, some of the traits of each of those, as you describe them, seem to maybe be mutually exclusive or maybe be uncommon in a person of the other type. Is that fair to say, do you think?
It could be. I mean, I see good managers who are very good managers. They're very good task managers, mm-hmm. but they lay waste to their staff in the process. And I don't think leaders waste or squander or lay waste to their talent.
And I know a lot of leaders who are so visionary and so horizon view oriented that it's hard for them to get into the nuts and bolts of managing a project type situation, too.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the case? Have you seen that, too?
I have. And where you have great visionaries, I think the most important thing you can do as a leader who's a visionary is to hire good people who are good managers.
Mm-hmm. That can be kind of difficult for one person to identify the other type, can it?
Every once in a while it is, but I think good leaders who are not good project managers recognize it, and so they find that resource either mm-hmm. through a project management office or they find a very good project-oriented person. And quite frankly, that's where HR really steps in, human resources steps in. It should understand, I've got a great leader here, but I need to give this person some help, and we're going to build into the organizational structure some support people mm-hmm. who may not have this vision. But by goodness, they can lead along the pathway and make sure that the vision gets the first steps, inertia, and then ultimately results.
All right. Let's talk about your theme a little bit when we come back, Paul. Paul Rousen is managing principal at Totally Engaged Workforce Solutions. He's my guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM today. Be back on In Depth with Francis Rose in just a moment.
A new company with more than 50 years of experience, ITT Defense is now ITT Excellus. The reliable, flexible partner you've come to know is now tightly focused on providing innovative, essential C4ISR solutions and information and technical services. Work with a true partner, ready to solve your challenges with situational agility and a record of rapidly fielding affordable solutions. Experience the power of ingenuity at excellusinc.com.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
Arma, your home security system gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
Dude, check out my new Pioneer DEH44 car stereo with built-in HD radio technology and new HD2 HD3 channels.
HD2 HD3 channels?
Get with it, man. HD2 HD3 channels are all these new free digital radio channels.
How do I listen to them?
With the new Pioneer DEH44 HD radio receiver. It's only $120 at Walmart.
Walmart? That's cool.
Yeah, just go to HDradio.com and check out the station guide. They're adding new channels all the time.
Learn about HD radio technology at HDradio.com. More radio, more value.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
The host drinks the most. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. College parties often involve heavy drinking, and one study finds that sometimes the host drinks the most. Ohio State University researcher Cynthia Bittner saw this in an online survey of close to 3,800 students who had hosted or attended parties over two academic years. Bittner says guests at parties in residence halls or off campus typically reported about 7 drinks, but off-campus hosts reported around 9 drinks. On-campus hosts reported around 4. Bittner advises hosts.
When you drink heavily, that means that you're not in a state where you can control what happens at your party in terms of who shows up, what kind of behavior is okay.
The study in the journal Addictive Behaviors was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Government IT acquisition professionals get the knowledge you need to meet today's serious challenges. Join over 500 government and industry colleagues at Acquisition Excellence, March 29th at the Grand Hyatt downtown. This education and training event is presented by the General Services Administration and the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council. Registration is limited, so don't wait. Register today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org. Look for the Acquisition Excellence link on the events page. We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Paul Rousen. He's managing principal at Totally Engaged Workforce Solutions. And Paul, you communicate with leaders in human resources and government on a regular basis, and I love to have you come on periodically to talk about what you're seeing and the challenges that people are dealing with. And you sent me over some notes that you wanted to talk about, but the theme that you gave me was the whittling away of the federal sector employee value proposition. Define value proposition. I know what it means generally, but specifically to this conversation, what you were getting at there.
Well, I think every person who works every day evaluates the deal. And they say to themselves, this is the parcel or the goods that I was sold. Is it living up to that value proposition?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are certain things which are called entitlement, and entitlement's not good. If an employee feels that, you know, that things will never change, business world changes, the globe changes. But as the cheese moves, people have to understand why. People have to be able to accept it. And you can accept making sacrifices when everyone's making sacrifices. What's hard to accept is when you see things going on around you at work or outside of work, and it makes you feel as though that you're being treated differently mm-hmm. and unfairly. And that's when the value proposition of work gets tarnished. That's when you lose morale. That's where you lose engagement. And once again, if you're more worried about what's not going well at work, you're certainly not working and you're not being innovative and creative.
Mm-hmm.
So the value proposition that I see happening here is over time, I've watched a systematic shutdown of rewards that some being very, very deliberate and meant to be responsible in terms of budget. But the unintended consequences of a combination of these rewards, I think, would have a very serious impact, not on the federal sector,
mm-hmm.
on the private sector.
Hmm. Why is that?
Well, you know, it's the same thing that happens when any company tries to right size, and we've talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
What size should an agency be? What's inherently government work? But what you have to be very careful is when you do a knee-jerk reaction and the pendulum is swinging in the opposite direction, all around cost control, you can really start to cut into muscle. And unfortunately, the tasks of many of these federal sector jobs, they're not getting smaller. They're getting bigger and more complex.
Mm-hmm.
And the private sector relies on a lot of these tasks to get done, because if they had to do it at their expense and at their dime, it would be far more costly than what we as taxpayers see or we as corporations pay in terms of taxes.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if I had to provide my own air safety to make sure that my customers got from point A to point B in a hotel,
mm-hmm.
or I had to make sure that all the food that I was serving in a multinational food service chain, a lot of which originates in the United States, was safe to eat, And I had to pay for my own food safety inspectors, or I had to pay for my own sky marshals. And everybody, every other business that competed with me have to do the same. I guarantee you there wouldn't be seats on airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
And I also will tell you that sky marshals wouldn't be talking to each other and leveraging the knowledge that they know in real time. So these are the types of things that, that are put at risk when you start to cut mm-hmm. some of these services. Well, when you start to take away people's the value of their pensions, which they consider to be deferred income for accepting lower wages from what they know to be competitive, when you start to see pay compression as you move up in an organization versus in the private sector, you see actually pay bands expand. When you start to see things like college internships starting to be pulled away, and when you start to see so few college students willing to even get into federal service, when this millennial generation is probably one of the more service-oriented because they've been groomed to graduate with service to graduate, mm-hmm. Systematically, I'm just seeing it almost saying, hey, need not apply here.
Yeah. It's one of the notes that you wrote was about the various things that are being bounced around in Congress mm-hmm. To affect the benefits package, the high three to high five. And I talked to Mike Causey about those from time to time. And we talk about the actual dollar values mm-hmm. On occasion. And in many cases, the actual dollar value of the impact of these things is not tremendous. And it's kind of, as I thought about this over the weekend, anticipating you coming in here to talk, it occurs to me that it's kind of the reverse of the whole concept about gifts. It's the thought that counts. And I wonder if you think I'm headed in the right direction there, that it's more the idea of all of these things and what they say about how Congress values the federal workforce than it is the dollar values that are here.
Well, I think it's true. I think it's, you know, the messaging is really one that is demoralizing. And it's the where's the bottom of this pool? How far will it go? And will it go overboard? Second of all, it is intentfully not discriminatory. It's not taking a look at some of the real challenges that we have out there in the federal sector, which is which jobs maybe should be eliminated and which poor performers or non-performers should be addressed. Really, by design, it's actually going after your top performers.
Mm-hmm.
The plan is this. It's such that when I take a look at it, if I were called into the room in a private conversation with my CEO in a private sector company, and he were to say, Paul, listen, over the next 3 years, I want you to systematically shut down all forms of rewards that would incent top talent, new talent, to come in and join this organization and stick around and be innovative and creative. I would like you to drive this company into bankruptcy by whittling away everything that would incent and cause a top performer to stay here.
Uh-huh.
I need a plan in 2 weeks. I'd say I can give you one tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And I would literally tell you that this 112th Congress is set on a course to do just that, in my opinion.
Well, let's talk about reversing some of these points on this list. And can we put your list up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth? Great. I'll pass that over to Jack Moore. He can post it, and we can talk about some of these concepts when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Find some real solutions with Paul Rousen, Managing Principal at Totally Engaged Workforce Solutions, next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Do you know someone who's done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's 3rd annual Causey Awards. Together we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search Causey Award.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Paul Rousen. He's managing principal at Totally Engaged Workforce Solutions. And Paul has sent a list of some of the things that are responsible for that, what he calls whittling away of the federal sector employee value proposition. The first couple of things on your list, Paul, are some of the things that you'll find on the bill tracker on federalnewsradio.com. And they involve the pay freeze and some of the changes to the benefits package. Is the savings that Congress hopes to derive from the benefits package worth what it costs in the human capital value equation there?
Well, I think it's hard to tell, Francis, because that's really kind of an HR related question, a human resources question. I think what you ask people to do is you ask people when you are looking to cut back, you share communications with your workforce that lets them know that we need to make some cuts, and you explain why that happens. But then what you don't do is you don't treat everybody equally. And that's a huge challenge for the federal sector, where equality and concern about discriminating is so great.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the number of advertisements for protection for federal managers against being sued. That in itself is a very risk-ridden proposition of being a federal manager. I mean, when it's basically saying Department of Justice will cover you for so much, and then after that you need to get your own insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, by the way, it's not a matter of if you'll get sued, it's when you'll be sued.
Mm-hmm.
That's a terrible way to go about trying to decide how you're going to treat your workforce. So the problem that I see is when you try to do a one-size-fits-all unilateral cut in pay, and you don't take a look at how you could better use pay, and you don't have an alternative pay system that gives you that kind of room for flexibility,
mm-hmm.
Then you could lose your best first. And the problem is then it's a race to the bottom. When you lose your best talent, when you cut their benefits, they know their worth in the marketplace. And although some may leave, some may not, they automatically start. They're the lead horses. They're the ones that show everybody the way. And you start to see some systematic shutdown. What could the cost be? It could be significant,
mm-hmm.
especially if these people are then retiring. and they're leaving the government faster than we can replace them.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got forced attrition. And the value proposition is so low that for replacing three star performers, you can bring in the person who's willing to come in to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
And that person is mediocre, maybe at best, and not a top talent. You also send a signal to your poor performers that, you know, it's worse on the outside. It better just stick around.
Yeah.
And don't worry about poor performance, because a warm body is better than no body.
Yeah. There are two different ways that you can take the words included in the phrase, the best person we could get.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't necessarily mean that we got a superstar. One of the things that we talked about earlier is the entry level, the new talent chain. That's challenging for agencies in a number of ways. There are some good things going on technologically that are appealing to young people, but you and I talked before we went on the air about the survey that indicated that some terribly low number, 6% or something like that, of college graduates in the STEM category are really interested and enthusiastic about coming into federal service.
I know. That's a particular worry. Once again, from a human capital strategy, the pool of talent that you're always looking to continually draw from is the new college graduate. Number one, you can afford to pay them less because they're joining the ranks at a more entry level. Second of all, you bring in brand new ideas, almost an inquisitiveness that you might not get over time once a person has kind of fallen into the system.
Mm-hmm.
And you also bring in a huge diversity component, and you also bring in some very smart people on how to use the new Web 2 technology.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very adept at social networking. So when you shut down that supply chain there, and then you're relying, and then you've got a huge boomer population, and Generation X is a big gap. That once again, it comes down to talent supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
That is just, that's a no-win situation.
This is Telework Week, and about 50,000 members of the federal service say that they're going to telework at least part of the week this week. Mm-hmm. Overall, what's the role of telework in this whittling away of the value proposition for employees?
Well, I think it's wonderful that there's a telework week, and I've been on a show here with Cindy Auten talking about how well is telework working. The problem is telework is one element of workplace flexibility, and it's kind of like saying I'm going to give up smoking for one day, but mm-hmm. you still go back to smoking. I mean, the bottom line is have you really changed anything, or is it a tactical plan for the day? Really, it's really about the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And do people feel comfortable teleworking? I will tell you that even in the private sector, we're seeing huge backslippage in flexible work. And why? Because in the private sector still, people are worried about their jobs. They're worried about, will my desk go away? If I give up my desk, will I ever get it back if I wanted it? Will my boss still value me as much as the person they bump into the hallway every day?
Mm-hmm.
Am I conspicuously absent? So I think when you take a look at all those workplace flexibility issues and when you take at telework week, the real question is it sticky?
Mm-hmm.
And is it becoming part of the culture? Or is this simply a COOP initiative for continuation? Let's do a proof positive around another Snowmageddon.
Mm-hmm.
That's tactical, in my opinion. That isn't long-term work culture, which leads to trust, autonomy, able to work anywhere, any place, flexibly, as long as you get results.
Mm-hmm. A couple more concepts I want to ask you about when we come back to wrap up, Paul. My guest is Paul Rousen. He's managing principal at Totally Engaged Workforce Solutions. And we'll continue our conversation. We'll get ready to close out this hour of the program when In Depth with Francis Rose continues.
Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"Virtualization abstracts the operating system and the data from the device. It provides a certain amount of agility and flexibility from a technological standpoint. Using virtualization and virtual desktop infrastructure to liberate the data from the endpoint device and bring it into the private cloud. That's key. The data in particular, it provides so much more flexibility for multiple devices to be mobile and geographically disparate and still have access to that data.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Here's an inspiring story provided by Insperity.
Hi, I'm Tony Sterling, Vice President of Project Support Services Incorporated, a service-disabled veteran-owned small business. We provide project and contract support services to federal, state, and local government. I wear many hats in my job, as I'm sure most of you do, in small and mid-market companies. In 2008, we had only 46 employees. Now, thanks to Insperity's diverse spectrum of services, we have 156 employees and a true national footprint. One of the keys to our rapid growth is Insperity. They give us the resources of a large corporation in areas like HR, payroll, recruiting, training, and consulting on compliance issues. It's comforting to know that we have Insperity in our corner.
Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community. You need the right resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Government IT acquisition professionals get the knowledge you need to meet today's serious challenges. Join over 500 government and industry colleagues at Acquisition Excellence, March 29th at the Grand Hyatt downtown. This education and training event's presented by the General Services Administration and the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council. Registration is limited, so don't wait. Register today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org. Look for the Acquisition Excellence link on the events page.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, talking about the people problem in the federal government. Paul Rousen, Managing Principal of Totally Engaged Workforce Solutions, my guest on the program today. One of the things that you addressed here in the notes that you that we talked about before is agency chief human capital officers say even their HR staffs are underfunded. They don't have the money that they need for training. They don't have the money they need to hire the right people. At what would it take, do you think, to get on Congress's radar screen the fact that people are a tremendously valuable resource and just attaching a pure dollar figure to them doesn't really meet the needs of their constituents?
Well, I don't know, you know, if you're going to be able to reach Congress effectively with that measure. My feeling is that, you know, unfortunately, the way the government is set up is very different than the private sector. The governance model for the federal sector is 535 folks who sit on the Hill, all with various degrees of understanding of human capital, and each with their own constituency that they have to respond back to. Very different from a board of directors, mm-hmm. which is basically by design, you have people on the board of directors who have qualified expertise in certain areas and they're responsible for that, but you don't have to get a consensus among 535 people for mm-hmm. every single piece of legislation that might touch the way you pay or have policy around folks. So it's a different animal. I mean, that's the bottom line. It's very unique.
Mm-hmm.
I think the challenge is always going to be that government is overhead. Overhead is always seen as a cost.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fundamental philosophy shift that says this, I think, that needs to take place, and that is government is not overhead. Government is a value-added service provider at a much lower cost, higher quality, and greater long-term sustainable value around some things that the private sector really needs and relies and depends upon.
Mm-hmm.
Then you need to whittle away what doesn't apply to that type of construct. So, you know, without getting too esoteric, they're just jobs that should, that even private sector say, this is not core. We shouldn't be doing these anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But let's focus on what really is core and what's essential. And let's make sure that we've got our best and brightest people, highly valued, highly rewarded. Let's look at a supply chain to make sure that the company, the country doesn't go out of business doing the work that needs to be done. And let's take a completely different viewpoint around federal human capital.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to take some fundamental change.
We've talked about a lot of things today. As we get to the end here, Paul, is there one of the concepts that we've talked about today that is the peg at the bottom of the Jenga pile, that if you don't do it, if you pull that peg out, the rest of it collapses? Is there one of the concepts that we've talked about today that you can't do the rest of them without doing one of these issues first?
Well, I think, once again, to run any type of organization that's mission-driven and mission-faced, you need people, processes, and resources. And you need to decide what is the minimal level that needs to be supplied and provided in order to make things work. I think the fact of the matter is, for the first time, I'm seeing potentially be people.
Mm-hmm.
We've always had a great supply of volunteers, public servants. But if this employee value proposition continues to wane, we may cut so deep that we will lose the hearts and the minds and the spirit of the great people that have served this federal workforce.